Good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to thank Professor Svalin for this invitation to give this seminar, this colloquium about PAMELA data. Today I will give an overview of these experiment, and my colleague Mirko Boezio will give more technical detail in a new and another seminar or meeting that we have here in next Friday. The official year of discovery of cosmic ray, as certified by a Nobel Prize to Victor Hess, was in 1912, and Victor Hess noticed that his electroscope discharged more rapidly as altitude increased. This results was not expected because the ground radiation was thought to be only terrestrial. Now we know that the cosmic rays are originated in the explosion of supernova and accelerated in this explosion, but mainly in by the supernova remnants that are the mantles that escaped from the star after explosion and is flying in space. This primary cosmic ray can interact with interstellar matter and can produce different particles, or can be break up and produce lighter nuclei as lithium, beryllium, boron, etc. Or they can produce many particles as antiprotons, pi zero that can decay into gamma, or pi plus pi minus that through plus mu minus can produce a plus a minus, and the plus a minus can give high energy gamma, and gamma by synchrotron radiation in the magnetic field, the galactic magnetic field, or Bressstrahlung in the interstellar matter, or inverse Compton interacting with the cosmic microwave background or other light. This gamma can be detected by several experiments that are now running in space, Chandra, Agile, and GLAST. The life for the charged particle is harder because they have to enter in the heliosphere. In the heliosphere, they suffer the solar modulation that lowers the energy spectra. And after, they have to enter in the Earth magnetic field before reaching our instrument. We can measure, detect the cosmic ray in two different ways. The first is a direct measurement outside the atmosphere, as PAMELA is, and on the top of the atmosphere, where the atmospheric background is lower, and many the vast part of the results come from these balloon-borne experiments, or with a big, very big apparatus on ground, on the top of the mountains, or underground. But the shower produced by a primary cosmic ray in the atmosphere are very interesting for many different reasons. Recently, because we had the atmospheric neutrino oscillation, and because we can measure this shower, and with this measurement you can know the primary cosmic ray. But this shower is very important for another motivation, because the particle physics born looking at the particle produced, directly produced in the Zeiss shower or detected or detecting the particle, secondary particle coming from interaction from this high energy particle with some target. Oh, now you can see this is the fluxes of a cosmic ray, all particle. You can see this we have 32 order of magnitude in the flux, 22 in the energy. We can divide this spectrum, into, as I said before, into parts. The first part we can measure only in the direct manner, and second part indirect manner. Looking better, here at very low energy, we can look at the I zeta particle. In this other part, we can look at isotope composition as is in space now, and you can study solar modulation. Here we can study antimatter and dark matter with MS, Epamera, MS02 in the future. Elemental composition at the CNI, in this cosmic ray, the CNI, and in this part we have to use ground experiment. On ground experiment and a very high energy to study the very famous zeta k effect, you can use a very large experiment as Auger in Argentina or looking from the space with a fusion experiment. Or as I said before particle physics born looking at the cosmic ray. We by plus by minus, by plus by minus, k plus minus, etc., have been discovered in the cosmic ray, and the cosmic ray was the most important tool for particle physics until 1953, when high energy accelerator started to run. High energy means that accelerator able to produce a new particle. The situation did not change for 20 years, but in 79 we had the return of the particle physics in space, looking again to at the cosmic ray. In fact, some experiment performed by Bob Golden and Buffington and 2 years and Bogomolov 2 years after by Buffington discovered antiprotons in on the top of atmosphere, because these were experiments, balloon board experiments on the top of the atmosphere. The problem is they found an amount of antiprotons much higher than expected in the standard interaction between high energy cosmic ray with the interstellar matter. After these results, theoreticians proposed many different, several ideas to explain the results, in addition to the standard production. Some idea concerned the cosmic ray leaking out of antimatter galaxy in a baryonic symmetric universe, or coming from annihilation of exotic particles in that year, no problem for dark matter, or for evaporation of the primordial black holes, and in more recent times we can look at antimatter coming from some bubble, super heavy bubble, that can exist for some theoreticians in our galaxy, in our study, and can this bubble could be matter or antimatter. And we can have antimatter coming also from a pulsar magnetosphere. Why you have to search for antimatter in the universe? It is well known that the Big Bang origin of the universe requires matter and antimatter to be equally abundant at a very hot beginning. But if you look at this spectrum, that is a spectrum of cosmic diffuse gamma, we cannot see any special feature that we can connect with some annihilation between the antiproton halo of some antigalaxy with the proton halo of some galaxy or between the two clusters of galaxy and antigalaxy. This always in the framework of a symmetric baryonic universe. In baryon symmetric universe. Looking at this data, this idea of a very large domain of antimatter has been ruled out at least at a distance of 100 megaparsecs. In any case, we can do some direct research of antimatter, trying to detect some antinuclei that can arrive from very distant antigalaxy. I want to remind that there is a difference between anti-helium and anti-nuclei with zeta more than 2, because anti-helium could be created in the early universe at the same time of the helium. But if you can detect, for example, a carbon, it means this carbon the results of some nucleosynthesis in some antistar. In addition, if this bubble of antimatter exists in our galaxy, you can have some signal from this bubble. But in the meantime, the astrophysics did a lot of progress, and the idea of dark matter started to be very important. You know that if you look at some star, you can see that these stars are rotating around the center of this galaxy so fast that they would fly away in space without the presence of additional mass inside the galaxy, because we can measure only the mass, the luminous mass. This is indirect evidence for the presence of dark matter. But this dark matter could be also baryonic matter or not baryonic matter. But now we have many different evidence of non-baryonic dark matter. In fact, if you from the cosmic microwave background measurement, we know the fraction of the baryon matter we can have, and you know that this is very low. We can look also at large structure of the universe. You can do some simulation and using some not baryonic dark matter, and we can compare with what we know about the large scale structure of our universe. Or we can study also the gravitational field of galaxy clusters. It means to have this rotation, this position rotation and movement of the galaxies, the clusters, we need to put inside our calculation some supplementary dark matter. In addition, we have lensing. It means the bending of the light from some very big and unseen dark mass of matter, and studying the Hubble constant. Now you know, we believe that the energy budget of the universe is shared among baryonic matter, not more than 4%, dark matter 23%, and dark energy 73%, 74, 75, you know, you can change some number. But we have many candidates for dark matter, WIMPs, Q-ball, axions, neutrinos, etc. But the most popular now is the neutralino. Neutralino is a composition of the supersymmetric partner of the neutral boson, gauge bosons of the standard model. You can see we have Fotino, Zino, A2, Xini of the supersymmetry. This neutralino has a Majorana particle can annihilate with another neutralino and through different channels, for example, quark antiquarks, especially heavy quark antiquarks, or through WW, zeta zero, zeta zero, can give as final states proton, antiprotons, electron, positrons, gamma, gamma, neutrino, antineutrino, etc. All of this contribution really can be detected now by the running experiment as a glass Fermi for the gamma, Amanda ice cube for the neutrino, and for the charged particle, Pamela, Bess, Heat, the future AMS. The problem is that these contributions are completely mixed with a very huge background coming from the standard interaction between high energy cosmic ray with the interstellar matter through the channel antiproton proton 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 or through the channels pi minus pi plus mu plus e plus or pi zero gamma gamma plus e minus. It means that this contribution will appear as a distortion of the energy spectra, normal energy spectra due to the standard production. We can see here one example, only without looking at the data, but these are calculations of the background. We name the background the standard production. Here is a possible contribution from neutrino annihilation. You can see you can have only some distortion in this spectrum. Another possible scenario exists in the framework of universal extra dimension. In this case, we have that the lightest particle is the Kaluza-Klein particle. But in this case, we have bosonic dark matter. And it means, it is very important, because it means that fermionic final states are not longer easily suppressed. So that you can produce directly a plus a minus final states. And it is important if we connect this with our data. After many, we have many searches for dark matter. You can have a direct search using a very large detector that can want to detect the interaction between dark matter with the detector, or they as a DAMA. DAMA and Libra, they want to look at some seasonal behavior. Indirect, I spoke before about indirect, and now with LHC, perhaps we can have some results about not dark matter, about particles that we think are dark matter from LHC. After the first Pioneer experiment, many others have been performed by WIZAR collaboration. It is our collaboration with the American Graph, Swedish, and Germany, MASSE, TRAMSI, CAPRISSE. This BESS, Japanese and American collaboration, that did several normal balloon flights and two long duration flights. And in 98, AMS-01 flew on board the shuttle and outside the atmosphere. The first results have not been confirmed, but in any case, a way was opened for dark matter study, antimatter study. What is the situation before Pamela? You can see here the flux, the ratio antiprotons, antiproton-protons. Here we have data. The data low energy are in general are data from BESS experiments. You can see two things. The first, the big uncertainty in the calculation of the background. Without, and another, the difference between the different experiments that have been performed at a different solar activity. What is the message from this, this? The first that we need to know much better the background, and we need to model much better or much better well the solar modulation. Otherwise, it is impossible to disentangle, for example, at low energy, some contribution from some exotic particle disentangle from the standard background. Because these are not experimental difference, it means some systematic error, but these differences are due essentially to solar modulation. Or if, looking at at the electrons, we can see that all of these experiments agree among them and agree with the standard production, but we at high energy, it means over 7 GeV, we have some flatness or some increasing that the situation is clear. One of the first points is increasing coming from TS 93, that was the first experiment that found this increase. It was our old experiment. This is an our old experiment. For antimatter, the best results we have now come from the combination of all the best flights, and we have a limit of the order of 3 × 10⁻⁷ in the anti-helium flux ratio. What do you need after looking at this data? You need measurement at high energies, better knowledge of the ground, high statistics, continuous monitoring of solar modulation. Pamela could be the first answer to all these questions. Pamela is a payload for antimatter-matter exploration and the Light Nuclei Astrophysics. This acronym was arrived many years after the name. You know, Pamela has been conceived as a space observatory at one atmospheric, at astronomic unit. With Pamela, we want to search, we are searching for dark matter annihilation, we are searching for anti-helium, as I said before, from primordial antimatter, we are searching for new matter in the universe, for example, strangeless, or we want to study cosmic ray propagation, detecting the nuclei at a wide energy range. We want to study solar physics as a solar flare. You can see a solar flare or and solar modulation. You can study the terrestrial atmosphere. You can see the South Atlantic anomaly. We can want to study the to look at the high energy electron spectrum to know if some nearby source exists. Pamela collaboration is composed of several Italian university NFN structures under the umbrella and, of NFN and the Italian Space Agency, from composed of the University of Siegen in Germany, the Royal Technical Institute in Stockholm, and the 3 leading institutes in Russia, the MEFI and the Lebedev in Moscow, and Joffe in St. Petersburg. The experiment is performed in the framework of the Russia-Italian missions, RIM is Roma in Russia, that took the heritage of the WIZAR, the balloon, and did several experiments on board a satellite for looking at the nuclei at low energy, and many on board the Mir station and the International Space Station for a radiation environment inside the station studies, and to study the possible risks of radiation for the astronauts. The core of PAMELA is a magnetic spectrometer composed of a permanent magnet and a tracking system. The tracking system is made of six XY, double side XY microstrip silicon layer. With this spectrometer permits the measurement of the sign of the charge, the rigidity, it means the ratio between the momentum of the particle and the absolute value of the charge, and the energy loss of the particle crossing the tracking system. As from the d and x, we have the absolute value of the charge. One of the main tasks, or perhaps the main tasks of PAMELA, is the detection and reconstruction of the spectra of antiprotons and positrons. But we have antiprotons, we have with the same charge also electrons. We have, if you look at the positrons, we have with the same charge also protons. It means PAMELA must be able to separate very well the electromagnetic and the hadronic components. For this task, PAMELA is using two detectors. One, the first, is a calorimeter. Calorimeter is composed by 44 mini strip silicon layers, 22 in the X-axis and 22 in Y, intervaled with 16 planes of tungsten for 16, no, 22 layers of tungsten for 16.3 radiation lengths and 0.6 interaction length. With this calorimeter, we can have a separation between the two components at a level 10 to minus 4, 10 to minus 5, and you can measure also the electron energy at a level of 5% up to 300 and more GeV, and you can measure the day on the X of the nuclei, and you can know the zeta of the different nuclei. The neutron detector is composed by two planes, each made of 16 helium 3 counters. New detector counts the neutrons produced in the electromagnetic and hadronic shower in the calorimeter. It is well known that hadronic shower produces much hadronic shower produces much more neutrons than an electromagnetic shower. It means a new detector can help this discrimination. In addition, a set of three double-layer scintillator planes, 1, 2, and 3, give the general trigger of the experiment, can give also the time of flights. It means that permit to separate a particle coming from the top, from the particle coming from the bottom, then can mimic antiparticle. And in addition, they can give us the measurement of the energy loss, and so that you can know the absolute value of the charge of the particle. In addition, we have a set of anti-coincidence scintillator. This is an overview of what this instrument is doing now. I want to remind that the ratio between a minus antiprotons in the level 10 to 2, but the ratio between protons and plus in the level 10 to 3, 10 to 4. This is a Pamela instrument, a geometry factor of 21.5 centimeter square steradiant, half tons as a mass. This is a size. Design performance. Pamela is measuring antiprotons, positrons in a wider range of energy between 80 MeV, 150, 50 MeV, 300 GeV, electrons up to 500, electrons plus positrons 2 TeV, protons up to 700, can measure light nuclei up to oxygen, up to 200 GeV per nucleon, and can search for antinuclei with a sensitivity in the antihelium-helium ratio of the order of 3 × 10⁻⁸. Pamela has been inserted in a pressurized container and installed on board this big satellite, the Russian satellite. This satellite is for Earth observation. But Pamela is using the half of the usable payload of the satellite. It means half of the satellite is for Pamela. For Pamela, the mass is 6.7 tons, and the satellite is the height of the satellite is 7.4 meters. Oh, the launch of Pamela happened the 15 June 06, and since July 06, Pamela is transmitting to the ground station in NZ Institute in Moscow 16 gigabytes of data every day in several different downlinks. What are the orbit characteristics? The orbit is a low Earth elliptic orbit, ranging between 350 to 610 kilometers. But it is important, the inclination, that is 70 degrees, it is quasi polar. It means that in the north and south pole region, Pamela can measure particles and nuclei at a very, very low energy, because in this region, as you can see the angle between the particle arriving and the magnetic field is approach zero. It means we have not a power bending of the Earth magnetic field. Oh, here at equator, we have the maximum power bending power of the Earth magnetic field of the order of 15 gigavolt. In addition, we can see also the radiation belt, the inner radiation belts, mainly composed by protons, and the outer radiation belt, mainly composed by electrons. Pamela crosses the South Atlantic Anomaly several times per day. South Atlantic Anomaly is an anomaly that exists in the Brazilian coast here, and is due to some anomaly of the Earth magnetic field, and in this point the radiation belt can reach an altitude of 200-250 kilometers. It means Pamela is crossing this huge amount of particles. This is the orbit of Pamela. Here we are at North Pole, where the bending power is minimum, equator, where the maximum, or in the South Pole, as a South Atlantic anomaly. Here we have some kink coming from the outer radiation belt. Oh, here with some data flight data, here you can see the positron, here we can see the electrons, two different curvature. Oh, here you can see the antiproton annihilation at rest, here we have another annihilation of antiprotons. What is now the status of Pamela? After more or less 700 days of data taking, that corresponds more or less 73% of the lifetime. We collected 12 terabytes of raw data and more 1.2 billion triggers have been recorded and are under analysis. We can go towards the data. Antiprotons. What about antiprotons? You can see here the antiprotons. You can see as a shower, the hadronic shower. You can see here neutrons in the neutron detector. What is the, here you can see the separation between the electrons and the antiprotons. Is this separation? Here we are using only one parameter, this fraction is not important, but only one, but you can see here, we can see the electrons, here you can see the protons and antiprotons that are at the same position that the protons if you look at the positive part of our spectrum. But the most important warning comes from the proton spillover. What is it? At high energy, some protons can be analyzed by our algorithm as an antiprotons for many reasons, some failure is in this, or for example, because the multiple scattering inside the tracking system. It means we can measure some antiprotons and some protons as antiprotons. Because the ratio between antiprotons and protons and the order to 10 to minus 4, 10 to minus antiproton, 10 to minus 5, it means we have to be very careful about this separation. And you can see these are protons that spill in the negative part of the spectrum, but these are the antiprotons. But you can see because this fraction too low fraction, we can measure an antiproton not more than 150, 100, 200, because if you have only one antiproton coming in the region of only one proton coming in the region of antiproton, we can have a big background. Oh, these are our data. Our data between some 100 MeV to 100 GeV. We can say several things about this data. The main are, you don't see any particular evidence of some signal coming from some exotic source. But this data can, this data constrained very much many models, because as I said before in the, for example, for neutrino annihilation, you can have proton antiproton and positron and electrons. If we don't see anything in the antiprotons, a proton flux up to 100 GeV, the theory has to explain why we can see, for example, some contribution in the electrons, in the positron spectrum, and not for this energy, or not contribution in the antiproton. In addition, you can see that this data can constrain very much the calculation of the background. I want to stress this point. We don't see anything about a signal, but the constraint that this data can give to the background calculation and to the models for dark matter is very, very, very high in this region of energy. Yeah.
So these are models of dark matter annihilating into antiprotons.
Yeah.
Okay. If dark matter does not produce antiprotons, if dark matter is inert, and does not produce such antiprotons, do you have a confidence that the expectation would be somewhere down here? That is this a signal? Is what you're seeing a signal over what you would expect if there was no signal expected from dark matter?
From antiprotons?
Yes.
No, we can give, we will give in the next future another point here, not more 150. But after I can show some idea. It means, for example, we can have some neutrino with energy of the order of the mass of the order of the TeV, and in this case we have
no. I'm asking a simple question. If there was no dark matter, to what extent, to what sigma, to what confidence level is this a signal compared to the expectation where there's no dark matter at all?
Yeah, what's the expected factor?
Yes, I don't know. No, not the
count.
Yes, no. This for us, this for us, it seems to be a background, but I don't have any idea about the level of if really this. If I understood well, there is some idea from other from some colleagues that here there is some signal of dark matter, and I understood, and the previous calculation of background are wrong, and the background, the level of background is lower, and we can, this could be, attention, because if we have dark matter signal from antiprotons, in general, we have the same behavior, not completely different, the same behavior, but if this is a level of background, this is the level of the dark matter signal, if this signal exists. Somebody is saying that this calculation are wrong, that the background is lower, but we don't know. But we try, or as Pamela, to do some things that can clarify this point. After I can explain.
So this result is consistent with cosmic ray physics.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
Yes, this is consistent with the cosmic ray physics. But but there is a lot that is clear. But I said before, if the calculations are more or less correct in the also in this level with this level of uncertainty, it is clear that there is not big room, not anything, but big room for antimatter signals in antiprotons flux is clear. But as I said before, if I can show after, I can show after the behavior also for of the antimatter signal added to the background is this, is the same. We have to be sure if this background is correct. But I try to say some things. This is our comparison with other experiments. Or here we have the absolute flux, I can better, or up to some 10 GeV. This is a results of two PhD thesis, but we hope now to give our flux up to 150 in the next future. Here we have quick app for this, the same I said before. You said before, if we compare this absolute flux with the background, you can see it seems that they fit very well as the background here and here. For this reason, I don't think that there is a real signal.
Sorry, what's the difference? What's the background supply?
The background comes from a different.
Just which line? In the solid line?
Start here. We have a different calculation of the background. All the background. There is a big uncertainty on the background due to many different motivations that I hope to speak about. I hope now continue to speak. What about the positrons? The positrons, as I said before, we have a ratio between positron and proton and positrons of the order of 10 to 3, 10 to 4. It means you need a separation of the order 10 to minus 5 between positron and the proton. You know, we have really to know very well this shower behavior, neutron detector, this electromagnetic shower, and we have to be able to separate the two different showers. Now, the potential selection only with a calorimeter, with an efficiency about 1, is of an order of 10 to minus 4 at low energy, only because we don't need a better efficiency at low energy, because we have a lot of positrons, and of the order 10 to minus 5 at measured with the flight data and with the test beam. It means this is a limit, because perhaps the capacity of discrimination is much better to 10 minus 5. This is a limit, because due to the number of protons and electrons used at the test beam. How we can, what is the one, now I show only one analysis we did for this separation. We did many, and perhaps Friday Mirko will discuss also the other. Oh, here, the first step is to put the fraction of energy in the calorimeter inside a cylinder with a diameter of 0.6 Mollier radius. You know that a cylinder of 2 Mollier radius as diameter contains 95% of the total electromagnetic shower. In this case, we take only one third of this Mollier radius. In this is the track. The line of the tracks is done by the tracker. And we divide this contribution with the total contribution of energy in our calorimeter. You can see here we have electrons appeared very clear. You can see antiprotons that they interact, and the antiprotons that not interact. In the positive region of the spectrum, we can see antiprotons, non-interacting antiprotons, that are more or less 40%, because they go through this line. All energy is inside this cylinder. Here we have a proton interacting. We expect our positrons. But after we do two things. The first thing we ask the shower start in the first level, or less in the first layer of the calorimeter. Second, we do the energy momentum matching. It means we match the momentum measured in the spectrometer with energy measured with the calorimeter, we have this behavior. The electrons appear completely clean, as a clean clear spectrum with up 50% of energy in the small cylinder, and here we have protons, we have positrons are in the same position of electrons with some contamination. If you want now wanted to compare this spectrum with what we obtained at the accelerator, if we mix proton data and electron data, and we use the same algorithms that we used for the positrons, we can have this behavior, and this behavior is very similar to this. We have this proton, positron, this, and electrons. But now here we have all deflection. Deflection is the inverse of rigidity. Here we have all electrons, here positron, here the background of protons. But we can do another thing. We can look now at the longitudinal profile. We can see here, this is clearly a positron. This is the longitudinal profile. This is a fit. For each data, we compare the longitudinal, the fit of the longitudinal profile with the gamma function, with the function connected with the Fourier shower. After this process, we obtain this part. Here we have electrons, here we have this small amount of the ground, here we have positrons. Now we did another thing. We compare our data with calorimeter data with Newton effector. This is a sample of electrons, pure flight electrons in the rigidity interval between 20-30 gigavolt. And this is the spectrum of neutrons connected with this particle. We connect, this is the electron, and this is the spectrum of the neutron we obtained looking at the Newton detector for the same particle. Here we divided this spectrum in two parts. In red, we name this proton, we name this positron, and we look at the two neutron spectrum. You can see from this that part that we named as a positron, we have this spectrum. For this, we have this spectrum of for proton. You can see this spectrum is very similar of this, but you have this contamination that appear here. Oh, we do many other tests and many other calculations, and perhaps not now the moment to speak about. Perhaps it's somebody or Friday you can speak about this. After doing all this, we obtain this data. The data we compare now only with the second production as calculated by Moskalenko and Strong in 98. Now we can compare with the last experiments, and when we look at the data, we realize that we had three different problems. One problem on the left, one problem on the center, one problem on the right. Oh, the problem, it is very clear. The problem appears very clear. On the left, you are not in agreement with all the other experiments performed before us on the top of the atmosphere. We know the problem, this experiment after. We are more or less in agreement with an experiment that flew in a balloon-borne experiment that flew in June 2006. It means at the same time of the launch of Pavia. It means at the same solar activity, more or less from Sweden to Canada, this battle group. In the center, we don't see, I explained after, we don't see the kink that it measured. But if you look well, they are in agreement with our data. We are not in agreement with them, but they are in agreement with us. No, it is clear because our are very very small. If you could take here standard deviation, the deviation is in agreement with this. But in any case, this is a problem.
Question: has anyone ever checked the Bosco Lake and Strong Paper. It's a very complicated calculation. So it's an 11 parameter model.
Okay. Okay. I hope it's right. Yes. Yes. Allora, you can start looking at the left part of the spectrum. Since difference is due to solar modulation. Why? The solar wind modulates the cosmic ray spectrum, and it is completely connected with the solar activity. You can see here, when you have the maximum of solar activity, you have the minimum of cosmic ray. Pamela now is able. Pamela is able to measure this solar modulation. You can see protons February since July 2006, August 2007, February 2008, and you can see that from July 2006 to February 2008, the activity of the sun decreased, but our data here are increased. It is correct. It means Pamela is able to study solar modulation at long term, short term, and so on. It is very important. But why we are not in agreement with the other experiment? I try to explain. When you speak about the sun, we have to divide the activity of the sun in two parts. When the sun is in the phase A plus, positive phase, it means when the projection of the magnetic dipole of the sun on the mechanical rotation the axis of the sun have the same versus, we are in phase A plus, in phase positive. When we pass 90 degrees and pass in this position, we are in negative phase. Oh, we have a different drift effect for the particle when we are in phase A plus and when we are in phase A minus. And this effect, also in this case, is different for positive and negative particle. You can see here, when the particle, all the cosmic ray arrive exacerbatedly in our heliosphere, but when they arrive at some tenths of a strong unit, if in phase A minus, in negative phase, the positive particle are likely conveyed along the neutral sheet. It means along the region where, in principle, the magnetic field is zero. It's zero, but it's not really zero, only one line. But in this case, they suffer from the fluctuation of the magnetic field along this long way, and they lose a lot of energy. While negative particle comes from the polar region of the sun and the earth and this year, and they lose much less energy. When you are in the positive phase, situation is completely different. Results of this is this calculation. You can see when we are in negative phase, A minus, as now, we have much less positrons. This calculation. When in positive, much more, less, more. You can see that apart from this very old experiment of Fenselow 69, all of the other experiments have been performed. Have been performed in this phase, and not but only in this. Oh, I don't speak about the protons, and I want to look some minutes now about the physics. I will come back to this our right part of our spectrum, this sharp increasing. We have a different possibility of to explain this. The first, as Professor said before, is connected with some secondary production. It means we have to know much better secondary production. Other is connected with pulsar component or dark matter. How about the secondary production? Why? Because this data could be due to spectral fissure in the proton flux responsible of secondaries. Is this production of a plus or a minus? A role of helium nuclei is a secondary production. Is a difference between local and interstellar master spectrum of the protons? Anomalous energy dependent behavior of diffusion coefficients or anomalous primary electron source spectrum. What Pamela is doing for this? For this, Pamela is looking at the electron, at the proton spectrum. We hope to give real data in a short time, up to the 500, 600 GeV. You cannot see any difference between helium and the proton, but we hope to give much better. What about the background? You can see here. The equation connected. The equation connected with the transport, propagation, transport, propagation of cosmic ray in the interstellar matter. There is a many contribution, but all this theoretical contribution is connected with some experimental parameter, as diffusion coefficient, primary particles, secondary production, etc. Pamela is able to disentangle, to separate proton, neutron, helium, and boron. In addition, can separate the different nuclei. It means Pamela now is measuring, for example, the ratio between boron and carbon, between boron and carbon. And this is very important because the ratio between the secondary primary is proportional to the inverse of the lifetime of the nuclei in the galaxy. It means this measurement, this other similar measurement, are very important because give us information about the amount of matter that our particle, our nuclei, are crossing before escaping from the galaxy. It means it is a very important parameter for background calculation. And Pamela is giving this data, and is giving also the ratio between lithium and carbon, beryllium carbon, etc. Here we have the primary, some preliminary data from Pamela. What about the electron? The electron, we can see some paper from Delahaye, Donato, etc. They try to explain our data as due to some positron background. But they are using, for example, here gamma 3.54, here 3.34, etc. We have no time to explain more, but now we are giving the electron spectrum, and you can, in the next month, we release all the data for the electron, but we find minus 3.28. I want to stress that Pamela can give now much more results that can confirm or not confirm if our data are due to some background or due to some exotic contribution or not background contribution. Allora, now to speak about the theory is more or less impossible because only in the first week after we post the disease. Now we have more or less 100 papers, and this is possible. We can divide only in two big groups, The first explanation is connected with some astrophysics signal. It means some signal coming from the pulses. You have your pulsar. We have in this rotating magnetic field, we have acceleration, very high energy acceleration of electrons. There is only two parts that is possible, the inner cap and outer cap. These electrons can give by singular radiation in this big magnetic field with gamma. This gamma is the presence of this huge magnetic field can give a positron and electrons. These positron and electrons can give some contribution, can be accelerated more, and can give some contribution to our experiment, to our data. Oh, we have two kinds of calculation. One kind of calculation looking only to some particular pulsars, as Geminga or Dasar. It means pulsars that are not too far from us and not too young. Otherwise, all these positrons and electrons are confined inside the nebula. Not too old, otherwise all this energy is dispersed in space. It means about some hundred thousand years. It's Geminga and another pulsar. Or other calculation is connected with the total pulsar contribution. Doing some guess about the number of pulsars we have in our galaxy. It is obvious that they can fit our data. The other is connected completely with dark matter. Oh, in this case, we wanted to remind you that now we have also the attic data. They have this increasing between 300 and 600-800 GeV. For example, we have some idea from Cholis et al. It's that try to explain our data and attic data. I want to stress that it's very important in this case are very important or antiproton data, because in preta data constrained very much. They constrained in this main moment to have as a final states essentially electron and positrons. And it means that the channel through we have this contribution could be, for example, WW or data. This is Cirelli. Cirelli overcomes the problem. He thought about 1 TV, more TV, and stopped the more TV and can explain our data and other data. Stop. Ecco, finish.
Okay.
I finish. This is a future for us. We have other data about Pamela, but solar flares, etc. But another time. I apologize for some minutes more, but it's very difficult to.
So why don't we have a few questions, and then we'll thank our speaker again, and then we can continue the discussion with our
panel. Apparently, a couple of questions. So, if you want to explain the spectrum, positron excess, if you want to explain the positron excess with width annihilation, he made boost the width annihilation as calculated by factors of 10 to 1,000. It's not clear where such a boost comes from. Also, it seems to me that if you can fit your data and the attic data with nearby pulsars, possibly gamma ray bursters, one should not jump to the conclusion one has seen dark matter yet.
Oh, so the first part I cannot give an answer because I did not show one because West will show Friday a calculation of our Turin colleagues that calculated the possible boost factor was connected with not a particle but antiproton data. They gave some limits. In the case of the boost factor, it's okay. It seems that we need this data need a very big boost factor, but not in all the theoretical proposition. There are some trial propositions with a factor 2, factor 3 as a boost factor. But in general, the normal wind production, as we know, in this case, need a very big profile. For this reason, theoreticians are thinking about other processes to overcome the problem of the boost up. That is constrained very much also by our antiproton data. I think that this is some astrophysics. See, in fact, that matter is better. Would be better.
So maybe one or two more questions, quick questions of a general nature, and then we'll
break. Okay. Yeah, so I just want to get a sense of the bottom line. So if it is dark matter annihilation, then what you're seeing is something decaying into electron-positron pairs with a fairly narrow distribution of energy.
Yes, in principle, if you understood that it is a narrow distribution, yes, but we have a transportation in the galaxy. In any case, we have enlargement of this distribution.
So what would be, if this is a dark matter particle annihilating, I'm sorry, these are very naive questions. What is the mass of, what is the rough mass scale of these dark matter, if that's what this is?
Oh, I have to do some choices because all of this data gave different masses. For example, our colleague in Michigan think about 250-300 as the mass. Other is Cirelli that want to explain antiprotons, antiprotons, positrons, our positrons, eidetic positrons, without thinking other idea is about some TV. Otherwise, in the normal way, we know it, or we have some tanks or some TV, or it is very difficult to explain as normal dark matter. But if you, there are many other ideas, Cholis, they had other ideas about this. Now, Michigan thinks about 250-300. It's not so easy, but the problem exists. The problem exists because the antiprotons constrain very much the mass and the boost factor also. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.